Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Jethro Jones. He is the 2017 NASSP Digital Principal of the Year, a former principal, and the host of Transformative Principal. He is also the founder of the Center for Cyber Ethics, independent nonpartisan educational institute dedicated to the study and promotion of cyber ethics, and author of the book School X, How Principals Can Design a Transformative School Experience for Students, Teachers, and Parents, and Themselves. Jethro currently consults with schools and districts on redesign efforts that don't seem like just another program. Jethro has worked as a principal at all K through 12 levels, including a prison school, a district coach, and a distance learning team lead and English teacher. Welcome to the podcast, Jethro.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here, Dana.
Well, it's great to have you on, and I've been a fan of the Transformative Principal for many years, so I'm really excited about having a conversation with you for the Out of the Trenches podcast. So we'll start with the question I ask everybody. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
So I had an experience where I got transferred out of a position and had a bunch of stuff happen that just made me feel like the world was coming to an end. Mm-hmm. And it was really challenging. And I was definitely depressed during that time. And my wife said, I could tell you were depressed because you played a lot of video games. I don't usually do that. And she noted that was how she knew that I was really struggling. And I thought that was pretty interesting on her part, because I've always liked video games, but didn't realize how much of a coping mechanism mm-hmm. it really was until that time. So the way that I pulled myself out was really relying on my faith and recognizing that I couldn't solve these problems by myself and needed help from a higher power. And mm-hmm. that's what made it possible for me to crawl out of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people, will say that just spending time, reading the Bible, spending time whatever type of religious activity that will help them stay grounded, or even type of meditation, right? Sometimes you need medication as well if you're dealing with anxiety and depression. But, I think recognizing that, like you said, you're spending so much time on the video games, your wife recognized that, right? And then you were able to come out. So, everybody's had those trench stories, and it's reassuring to know somebody that's, been a principal and has been supporting principals for a while has had that type of experience as well. Well, let's transition into talking about your book, School X, and kind of how the concept of writing it came to fruition. I know you were talking about it for a couple of years on your podcast, mm-hmm. and then how it then came to be published.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story, because it was actually rejected by several publishers before mm-hmm. it was finally accepted. So that's, another trenches where, you look at the finished work, the published thing, and you think, oh man, that's great. Looks like everything went well. And mm-hmm. in reality, there's a lot of struggle that goes into that. And so I've actually been thinking about this book for probably a decade at this mm-hmm. point. And it started when I was an assistant principal at a Title I elementary school. Mm-hmm. And as I was walking up to the building at that school one day, I took a picture because it was so beautiful. And I thought, man, this is just idyllic. It had rained, so the grass was wet, but the sidewalks were mostly dry. The sun was rising behind the building, and it was just beautiful. And I thought, this is a great school. And I walked up to the building, and at the doors, instead of seeing the greatness, I saw this sign that basically said, you are a bad person, and we don't want bad people in our school, so mm-hmm. you can't come in. And it didn't say that, right? But that was the impression that I got by looking at it. It was something that all schools have up that says, all visitors must check into the main office or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, man, this is just this is not a welcoming sign. This is not a, we love you and want you to be in our building kind of sign. And I thought, how would I feel if I were a parent walking up to the school? And, you know, I was a parent at the time, I still am, and tried to think about how I would feel if this was my school as a parent. And I just felt like, boy, seeing that sign after the beauty of the sun rising behind, the sunlight kissing the rain on the grass, thinking, this isn't the kind of thing that I want to send. So I took the sign down and I wasn't supposed to, but I put up a new sign that said visitors welcome or something like that. Or maybe I left no sign up. I don't remember. Either way, I wanted to make it more inviting. I wanted people to feel like they belonged at the school. And that's where I started thinking, we need to change how people experience our schools so that we're actually paying attention to it. Because the reality is so often we're not paying attention to it. It's rote. It's something that we're already used to as employees of the school, as principals. And we really need to make a concerted effort to look and see what other people are experiencing when they come to our school. Mm-hmm. And so that was the germ of the idea. And then later with my friend, Danny Bauer, we did a leadership summit about that one summer, talked about the different areas of the school experience. And then after that, I continued researching and learning about it and then wrote the book, helping people figure out how to use the design thinking process to solve the problems that people are experiencing with their school. And I wanted to do that so that people would have an opportunity to really make a change in their school that would be adapted to their people. So you can't just change something in a school because you saw somebody else do it and just try to adopt that wholesale. You need to do something that works for your school, and your school is an individual school. It is not the same as everybody else.
Yeah. And I think that's so powerful because just thinking of the adults, either a parent walking up to a new school, right, and having that rejection sign. I mean, this year has been different. You know, you have children that go to all levels, and I have kids in elementary, and you know, you have to get them early and you can't even go into the building this year, right? But also if you are an adult and you're looking for work at a school and you're interviewing, you know, that's something that also shows the school culture. If there's something that doesn't look welcoming either at on the door or, you know, outside, if there's trash, right, on the lawn. So I think that's really important how the school looks to those within the community, those visiting the building, right? And So you said it was rejected. So did you end up self-publishing, or how did the publishing process go?
Yeah, I did find a publisher, John Catt, who's pretty big in the UK and was just starting out here in the United States. And they agreed to publish it, for which I was very grateful. And they've been a sponsor of my podcast as well, which has been a really great relationship. So what made me choose to go with them was that they were publishing the kind of books that I would want to read as an educator. And I think that that's really important, because looking at the types of things that they were promoting made it seem like I would be a good fit in that group. And I know that in the other places that rejected me, I just wasn't a good fit with the with the other authors. My ideas are a bit out there and different, and being able to be with a publisher that supports that and understands it as well, I think is really valuable. So I was happy to find them and work with them.
And for a leader who picks up this book, or an aspiring leader even, what kind of benefits will they get? Is it talk more about school culture? Or is it talk kind of more about the design thinking process and maybe designing your dream building? So what would they get?
Yeah, you know, it's a combination of those two. It's about using the design thinking process to design a school that is perfect for the people that experience that school. And, you know, a school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is going to be different than a school in Oakland, California. And rather than trying to be like every other school out there, you really need to grasp onto the things that make your school unique and highlight those and bring awareness to those and make people feel like that is what really matters. So it's not so much about, you know, designing the dream school. or a perfect school. It's about designing a school that's right for the people who are part of it. And to be honest, Dana, that's going to change every year because the people in the building are going to change. But when you're designing for the people that are actually there, what you have are activities and experiences and feelings and a culture that is designed for that group. And therefore, it can be the perfect school for that group. It may not be the perfect school according to the U.S. News and World Report ranking of the 100 best high schools in the country. But if that's what you're going for, it's, there's a very specific way to get there, and you just need to do that. But if you want your school to be perfect for the people who come and experience it every day, it's very possible. And you involve them in that process as well.
So would you suggest this is a good thing to have for like a book study for admin teams as they maybe look at their mission, vision, and purpose in the upcoming school year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wrote it to principals because they lead the charge on there, but anybody in the school can pick this up and learn the same principles. A teacher can use it in our classroom. A parent can use it for the PTA. They can use it to help them encourage the school to make different changes, but it's definitely a great book study to check out. And the best thing is you don't have to do it over the summer or do it for August training. It is literally designed for you to be constantly working on improving your school. And you don't have to start it at a certain time. You start it when you see a problem. You start it when you see something that doesn't fit, when you see something that you don't like. And the idea is not to make these grand wholesale changes every single year, but to make little tiny changes all the time, improve something by just a few percentage points. And that will make a lot of things better, things that we never would have thought of. One example of this is that sign that I talked about before. But another way to think of it is there's another experience where I was in a school, and this was a prison school, and we needed, we were having this discussion about how to make sure these kids were getting credit because they're in prison and they could be transferred at any time, and their, you know, their end date could come up and then they could be back out in the regular system. And the school had thought for years, you know, we need to get through the curriculum. And so we started asking the question, what actually do the kids need to know to say that they've learned what they need to learn in that course? And then we prioritized doing that. And it was a very simple change, but what it did is it made the teachers understand how to serve the students better. And it made the students understand what they needed to accomplish while they were there. And what we saw, amazingly, was kids who weren't really engaged and thought, you know, there's no point in doing school anyway. They said, oh, that's all I have to do. And then I pass this class. I'm going to actually put in some effort and make sure that
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Learn what I need to learn. And that was just a little thing, Dana. It was just changing how we thought about what they needed to learn. And it made a huge difference in the teachers and the students' lives.
And I think that also is something that a lot of teachers have found out this year. It's like you weren't able to cover the whole curriculum with all the interruptions going to remote and in person and back and forth, but looking at what do they know need to know for that course, right? How can they show their learning? I think that was something that really most teachers had to look at in terms of student progress. And, you know, we're all worried about the catching up, and, you know, a lot of kids are going to summer school and those type of things, but I think it's showing, you know, that you've mastered the task. It's not necessarily the loss of learning. It's, you know, did you learn like resiliency this year, right? Like I think a lot of students did. And that kind of ties into my next question. I wanted to ask you a little bit about some challenges that you have encountered over the past year. So you talk a lot on your podcast about your daughter who has Down syndrome, and you've recently moved from Alaska to Oregon. So
Washington, sorry, you lived
in Oregon, Utah before, now you live in Washington. So tell me a little bit kind of as a parent, how that was for you and just whenever her school was remote, how did that work? And, you know, how did her school support her?
You know, we're really fortunate that here in Washington, she's been able to go to school pretty much all year long, nearly 5 days per week.
Okay.
And that's been really great, because what I appreciate about what the school did is they said, those who for whom online learning is just not going to work, and she is mm-hmm. one of those, mm-hmm. That she needs to be in person, they made that a priority and found a way to make that happen. And there were there weren't testing requirements, but there were screening requirements and things mm-hmm. like that. And really, that was a huge blessing for our family, because, you know, we love her and can certainly help her, mm-hmm. but she reacts much differently to a teacher than she does to her parents, like a lot yeah. of kids, to be honest. Yeah. And, you know, with our three younger kids, we did homeschool with them because we knew they'd be out of school for virtually the whole year. And so we figured we might as well, you know, do that with them. But she was able to go to school, and she's had great teachers who have really been there to support her. And one of the things that really helps is that the school actually said, who actually needs to be here? Who really mm-hmm. needs to be in yeah. person? And let's find a way to make that happen. So mm-hmm. she's got this big, huge high school with probably 2,000 kids in it. And she and like 20 other kids are the only ones attending every day. And mm-hmm. so big, huge high school, nobody's there except for the teachers of these 20 kids. And the teachers are doing all their online stuff, but she was able to be in person. And I just really appreciate that the school took the time to really think about that and not say everybody has to be home no matter what, but mm-hmm. say we need to do something special for these unique circumstances. And they weren't afraid to make that decision and do that. And I think that shows a lot of wisdom mm-hmm. and a lot of care and concern. You know, personally, I think they waited too long to bring everybody else back. Yeah. The district 5 miles north of us had people in person all year long. And so that kind of stuff, it doesn't make a lot of sense when that does it. But what I appreciate is that they actually thought, who really needs to be here? And they made sure that that happened.
Yeah, and that's kind of the experience of Denver too, is there. I'm in a district where the kids were mostly in person all year, except for November to the elementary, early January. The middle school was early February. So that was maybe, I don't know, a fifth of the year or something like that. But, you know, there's a hodgepodge, right, of when people went back in the fall and when kids were able to be, you know, full in person. But, you know, I recognize that as well, having a son on an IEP, and, you know, he was able to go back 4 days a week when the other kids only went hybrid. So just having that opportunity to be in the building, and, you know, he's really thrived the last two quarters of the year, just with things that are the only thing for those kids, I think, that's not normal is the masks, right? Because it's gotten pretty much back to normal. So,
well, and Dana, I think that that's a really good thing to bring up also, is that some kids are thriving in these different circumstances. And if a school district is not looking at how to continue some virtual, even if we're all back in person next year, families are going to go find that someplace else. And that's just the reality. And I know a family who decided to homeschool through a charter network this mm-hmm. year, and it's been the best thing in the world for them, and has like, they thought they would always do public school, and then they found out that they could do homeschool, and it could actually meet the needs of their family much better. Mm-hmm. And boy, let me tell you, they've blossomed this year because mm-hmm. they've had a different experience, something they never would have tried otherwise. And, you know, if a school is not offering options to people, they're going to lose students over the coming years, because families now understand there's a different way to do things. Mm-hmm. And some students have been incredibly successful not showing up to school at all. In fact, one of the principals I work with in a mastermind, he said, there are seniors who are graduating this year that I've not seen in the building all year long, even when we've mm-hmm. been hybrid and whatever we've been doing. I've had no communication with them because they're doing so well that they don't need us to be here. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard that sometimes with kids who are behavior problems, they can be much more effective by being online and not being a distraction to or distracted by other students in mm-hmm. the school. And so we really need to make sure that we take advantage of this opportunity to continue to provide different services for kids that need them. And if we build those relationships and we understand what their experience is at school, then we're going to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, you make a good point. And having worked with student attendance and discipline, and you know, seeing when, you know, especially this year when they're quarantined and they come back, and the school district made it a point when we were back 5 days a week in person, you can't, you know, self-select to quarantine, right? Mm-hmm. So there were kids that still stayed home and wanted to join the Google Meet. But so when we're back next year, you know, that's a thing. The school district is trying to say, hey, we're going to offer this online option. They did give a deadline to enroll, but, you know, I'm sure they're going to let people in on a rolling basis, right? That they want to be able to staff that. And I've seen a lot of districts in the Denver area who are, you know, getting that kind of off the ground for that online school. And like, as you said, I mean, there are students who I've known in the past who, you know, I have suggested some type of an online schooling, but I think if these districts can make it something that's also able, the students are able to transfer to throughout the year, because I've come up against, you know, when we didn't necessarily have a district online option and they had to do a charter or something like that, that these charters would only take kids up until October count that we have in Colorado, right? And then I would try to get them in late October, early November, because they weren't succeeding after first quarter in the brick and mortar environment. There would just be, you know, a straight no. So that's what I'm hoping too. I mean, there were kids that might have only been in person 2 days a week this year, or might have been fully remote. And then, you know, there's going to be challenges for those kids who are going back full time in person in the fall. And, you know, I think if we can have a little bit of flexibility with these online options, that, you know, kids can realize it's not necessarily about the pandemic now. It's more about finding out what is the best learning style for these kids, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's what's interesting about that is that the October 1st deadline is because of funding for schools. And so at that point, you know, you don't get money for that year after October 1st. Like, that's, you're locking in the previous year's count and saying, this is how many kids it will have. And we experienced that a lot in Alaska when I was principal of a homeschool program, where the school didn't get any money for kids who transferred there after October 1st. But if they were there before then we got the full allocation for those students. And that's a really challenging place to be, because charter schools can say, we can't accept anybody else. But public schools, they still have to accept kids. And so what happens is, you know, you get these kids coming in after the October 1st count, and that can really wreak havoc with a budget if you don't have the staffing in place for that. And, you know, every school district tries their best to plan and forecast who's going to be there, but it's not always possible to be, to get that exactly right. And so those are real challenges, and those are things that we need to address and ensure that we've got the kids on our roles, so that we know who's coming and who's going to be there. And then we do our best to keep them with us and provide the services that they need.
Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Well, you know, we didn't talk about this yet, but I saw an act of compassion yesterday that I just want to broadcast and share, because it was so beautiful. So we talked a little bit about my daughter, and she recently had a surgery, and she's had a hip and Achilles surgery, and she's in a walker right now. And yesterday was rainy, and I dropped her off at a early morning seminary at 6:45 in the morning. And as we were walking up, I was like telling her to hurry up, because it was raining, Dana, and the water was falling on our heads. And I was like, let's hurry and get inside so we're done. And she's, you know, hobbling along in her walker. And this young woman who's in her class came and said hi to her. She was walking in, and instead of just saying hi and going past, she stopped and walked and waited with my daughter until she got there and got inside. And she walked with her all the way into her classroom. And what I love about that is that it shows that our kids are paying attention to others, and they see what we do. They see what others do. They know how to be compassionate. And if we start with compassion for everything that we do, we're going to find success. And this sweet young woman stood next to my daughter and walked slowly in with her while she was getting drenched in the rain and didn't seem to care about it at all. She cared more about helping my daughter feel loved and accepted. And as a dad, that means the world to me. As a human being, I love seeing that. And as a teacher, I love seeing that kids are learning those skills. And she did that without being told to. So that's something I'd want to leave with everybody is be compassionate and find someone who you can stand next to in the rain while she's hobbling into the school building.
Well, you have some upcoming professional development this summer. If you want to share a little bit about what people can find on your website, if they want to enroll in some of that professional development and what kind of topics that you do.
Yeah, so there are a couple that I think are really great right now. One is about trauma. I have a course that I've created that is a good refresher or an intro. If you, you know, if you haven't done anything or if you've done something and people have kind of forgotten about it, 10 short lessons, all about trauma, all less than 10 minutes. That's at jethrojones.com/trauma. And then I also do individual work with districts around student-driven learning, which is where we put the onus on kids to be in charge of their own learning, because they are, no matter what we do or say, kids are in charge of their own learning. And so we find a way to systematize that and put it into the system so that they're the ones choosing. And what we see with that is that kids are learning way more than we could expect them to otherwise, even if we plan and prepare everything for them, they learn more when they are in charge of it. So if you want to talk about that, just go to jethrojones.com and there's a click to schedule a link to talk to me and we'll be able to set that up.
Great, great. And where can people find you online, like on Twitter and other social media?
Yeah, at Jethro Jones on pretty much everything. That's the benefit of having a unique name.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure to put links to your website and your social contacts in the show notes. And it's been great, a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thanks so much and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.